He guided me down the hill. I was shocked to see life going on as usual.
They don't know.
They know. They just don't care.
No. No, I can't accept that. When they know that Malcolm has been killed, the people will riot. They'll explode.
This way, Maya.
Bailey steered me deftly through the open doors of the Havana bar.
Excuse, please.
Coming right up.
When the bartender slid them in front of us, Bailey touched my elbow.
Hey, man, you hear what happened to Malcolm X?
Well, hell, man. They shot him. You know what they say? You live by the sword, you die by the sword.
How dare you? Don't you know what Malcolm X has done?
Thanks, man. Keep the change. Come on, Maya. You gotta hold it together.
Maya! Look at you. How you doing, Bailey?
Trumpet, Malcolm X is dead.
I was relieved to find Trumpet still working in the bar. He had been a pal of mine in the lean days before I went to Africa, and we had spent long hours talking about the ways of the world.
Really? That awful news. Sorry to hear that. So, when do you get home? How was Africa?
Trumpet, don't you understand?
Trumpet, get your drink, Maya. Let's sit down at the table.
Bailey must have seen at that moment that I was quite soberly going mad.
You can't go back to New York. There is no OAAU, and you can't start one on your own. Accusations are going to be flying thick as grits. That ain't no place for you. Stop that. What happened to you in Africa? Did you forget? You can't let people see you cry in public. That's like laying your head down on the chopping block in the presence of an executioner.
What can I do? I don't want to go back to Africa. You say don't go to New York, but I hate San Francisco right now.
Come on. Let's get out of here.
As the weeks transpired, I was to prowl my mother's house and San Francisco like a lame leopard. Papers ran pictures of the handsome Malcolm before the assassination, alongside the photo of his bloody body, with his wife Betty leaning over her beloved on her knees, frozen in shock. If a group of racists had waylaid Malcolm, killed him in the dark, and left his body as a mockery to all black people, I might have accepted his death more easily. But he was killed by black people, as he spoke to black people about a better future for black people. The future seemed hopeless.
Maya, let me tell you what's going to happen. In a few years' time, there will be beautiful posters of Malcolm X. That very barkeep at the sword will say Malcolm was a great man. People will revere him in 10 years, and you will get into trouble if you try to remind them that they didn't appreciate him.
And what do I do with myself until then, Bailey?
Remember what Mama said.
You meant our grandma in Arkansas.
Change everything you don't like about your life. But when you come to a thing you can't change, change the way you think about it.
You'll see it new and maybe a new way to change it.
We'll think of something, Maya.
Malcolm's death, I went to Hawaii with my brother and did a little nightclub singing. It paid the rent, but I still wasn't happy or content. I would never be a great singer, and I didn't love singing. So I made a decision. I would return to the mainland, to California, and search until I found something I loved doing. I had begun writing a stage play, and I had a notebook full of poems. I could polish them up a little, present them to a publisher, and pray a lot. In Los Angeles, I rented a small, dark apartment and painted every inch of the visible walls and the entire floor bone white. I had a house. Now, I needed to earn some money, so I got a job.
Good morning. I am working for a company called Random Research, and they want to improve the quality of the goods you buy.
The salary was pitifully low, but the job was simple, and it allowed me time to think and develop my play. Watts was my assigned locale. A black neighborhood, with once an air of studied grace, now lost, whose gardens were still tidy, but whose men had no jobs and were lounging on front porches and steps. I directed my questions to the women.
May I ask you a few questions? Your answers will ensure you will find better foods in your supermarket and probably at a reduced price.
What questions?
Well, what cereal does your family prefer? And, what soap powder do you
use? Not today, thank you. Goodbye.
The person who wrote those lines for us to say knew nothing of black women. They know that the world is not much concerned with the quality of their lives, or even their lives at all.
I'm sorry. May I try again? I have a job asking questions.
I knew a straight back and straight talk would get the black woman's attention every time.
There are some companies that want to know which products are popular in the black community and which are not.
Why do they care?
They care because if you don't like what they are selling, you won't buy it, and they want to fix it so you do.
That makes sense. Come on in.
The women range from college graduates to those who would find it challenging to read the daily newspaper. Some would say,
my husband ain't home. I don't know where he's spending his time. He's not working. Makes me a little suspicious.
Whilst others said,
with him not working, I'm home all day and I'm tripping over him and his friends.
The women opened their doors and their minds to me. I found hard-working and hard-thinking women, and the burden of their conversation was always the same.
The public transport's so bad. If I want to get to work at 8:30, I have to leave home at 5. I buy my groceries near where I work, because the food here in Watts costs more and it ain't as good.
Indirectly through them, I met their men.
They ain't breadwinners no more. They ain't no jobs no
way. Fact is, without work and regular money coming in, I can't see no kind of future for any of us.
Furious with themselves and each other, the men and women began to abandon their children, and those bootless children, without the steadying hand of a parent who cared, left school and began to run like young tigers in the streets of Watts, growing bolder and angrier every day. The sounds when they came were clear, fast, and furious. But the uproar in Watts taught me something I had not known. Odor travels faster and farther than sound. Burning wood first, then the smell of scorched food, the stench of smoldering rubber. All of these an hour before the news caught up.
There is a full-blown riot in Watts. Watts is an area in southeast Los Angeles. Its residents are predominantly Negroes. The police have been deployed and have stated that we have nothing to fear and that in a few hours they will have everything under control.
Those of us who watched the action live on television over the next few days knew that the officials were talking through their hats. Political analysts observed that the people were burning their own neighborhoods. The rioters considered the stores the property of the colonialists who had come into their neighborhood to exploit them and take their hard-earned money. 2 days passed, and I could wait no longer. I needed to see for myself. The smell was putrid, as plastic furniture and supermarket meat smoldered. People pushed piles-high store carts out of burning buildings. Police seem to be everywhere and nowhere, watching from inside their cars.
You want a radio?
What? No!
There was no guilt in his voice, as though we were in this together.
There's plenty more!
The further I walked into the smoke, the more difficult it was to breathe. I turned to go. Policemen in gas masks emerged out of the smoke, figures from a nightmare. Terrified, I started to run. They grabbed a man in
come
front
here,
of me.
Get off! Come here! Take your hands off me, pig! Let me go! Let me go right now! Let me go right now!
I couldn't see the pavement. My lungs were going to burst. My calves were cramping, but I pushed myself along. Someone grabbed for me. I shrugged off the hand and continued running. I was still running when I realized I was breathing clean air. When I returned home, the television coverage was mesmerizing. The National Guard arrived in Watts. Rumors were that police were arresting anyone black and those suspected of being black. Watts went on burning. 2 days after my tentative foray into the war zone, I had to go again. This time, I would not run. The devastation of burnt cars and buildings was so much broader. Armed civilians stood in front of ravaged businesses, as did the National Guard.
Hey, man, Mr. National Guardsman, what you got in the pawn shop for? That stuff was already stolen in the first place.
That evening, I sat down at my kitchen table and wrote on a yellow pad.
Your friend Charlie Pawnshop was a glorious blaze. I heard the flames lick, then eat the trays of zircons, mounted in red-gold alloys, Easter clothes and stolen furs, burned in the attic, radios and TVs crackled with static, plugged in only to racial outlets. Policemen caught in their brand new cars, chugga, 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 get me one nigger, looting and burning, he won't get far. Screeching nerves, exploding minds, lives tied to a policeman's whistle, a welfare worker's doorbell finger.
I had returned to Watts, ready to be arrested. On this visit, neither the looters, the police, the spectators, nor the National Guard took notice of me.
Come on, keep it moving. Hold on there.
Arrested men were marched in chains, close enough for me to touch them. The havoc now had areas of calm. People sifted through the debris. A woman smiled with pleasure when she found a matched pair of shoes. Older citizens were spent, and I read the sadness and futility on their faces. I headed home with an equal mixture of disappointment and grief. The ash had not settled before the streets were filled with tourists and journalists from around the world, all asking the same questions.
We want a medical clinic so that sick people don't have to travel 2 to 3 hours to see a doctor.
Yeah.
We want jobs for the unemployed.
Yeah.
We want better jobs for the employed.
Yeah.
We'll be standing out here for now. This is what we
want. 34 people died. Most were black citizens. 2 policemen and 1 firefighter were amongst the casualties. Most of the deaths were caused by the Los Angeles police or National Guards and were deemed by the authorities as justifiable homicides. Suggestions were made to improve schools, employment, housing, healthcare, and relations with the police department. There was little follow-up. Sid's Cafe and Bar was a popular hangout. The owners were highly respected cooks of Louisiana food and liked and welcomed me. So Sid's became my base. One evening, a group of 4 in the red booth at the front of the cafe were particularly interesting.
Hey, you alone?
Yes.
Well, join us. Are you from New Orleans?
No.
Well, we are. Where did you run away from?
I came here from Hawaii, and before that, San Francisco, and before that, Ghana in West Africa.
Hey, all right. You'll fit right in with me. I'm one crazy lying nigga, too. My name is Phil. What's yours?
My name is Maya, and I am neither a nigger or a liar.
I don't mean any harm. You sound like a little teacher I had in Baton Rouge.
I thought you were from New Orleans.
Told you I was a lying nigga. I can be ornery, too.
Then maybe I better go back to my table.
No, stay. Don't mind Phil. He says these things, but he don't mean any harm.
I enjoyed the group's company. And after a while, Phil used the racial slur less. One morning, he suggested we all go for a ride. We piled into Phil's rundown old car.
James, don't spare the horses. Driver, follow that cab.
We were in high spirits as we crossed railroad tracks. Then, Phil stopped the car.
What the hell?
I couldn't see the train, but judging by the sound of its whistle, it was just around a curve in the tracks.
Move the car! Move the damn car! You're gonna get us killed!
He drove the car off the tracks. Seconds later, the train sped behind us.
You all right, Maya?
Phil stopped the car on the corner by my house.
You want to get out here?
He must have known I had been scared enough to pee on myself. I crossed the street in front of the car to give him a good chance to see me.
I scared the piss out of her. Look, Maya, come back and clean up my car. Come back. I won't do it again.
In my house, I showered, and the terror released in me. In clean, dry clothes, I remembered Phil's self-description when I first met him. I had learned one important lesson. Believe people when they tell you who they are. They know themselves better than you.
Hello?
Is this my Maya? Maya, speak to me. This is your husband.
He wasn't my husband, but he was a great love and my greatest fear, and I had left him in Africa.
Hello, Shekali.
I am in New York City. I've come to the States to collect you. God gave you to me, remember?
He had taken the heart out of my body and worn it boldly on his shoulder like an epaulette, and I had adored him.
Are you really in New York City?
I am coming to California to collect you and to take you back to Africa.
My Maya.
Shekali.
Shekali filled my little studio apartment with his maleness. He was from Mali, but lived in Ghana. He was astonishingly handsome, incredibly wealthy, and utterly charming. He was also loud, bombastic, and autocratic. In Ghana, we had argued loudly and reconciled feverishly so many times that finally I had left him.
I've come to take you back.
I have made a life for myself here, Shekali. I am not going anywhere with you.
I am hungry. Make food for me, Maya. But first, I will feed off of you.
Before I knew it, like the Harmattan wind from the Sahara Desert, he wended his way into my home, my heart, and my life.
You will have to buy another wardrobe, Maya. There is not enough space for the rest of my clothes here.
The rest? There's more?
This is my home. You are my Maya. Where else should I keep them? When we step out together, I must be worthy of your love.
Life became full of small surprises.
Maya!
A dinner will be ready in a few minutes, my love.
Come, listen.
What is it?
Do you remember?
Oh, the first time we danced together. Yes, of course I do.
I brought the music with me from Ghana, so you would not forget. You said this was your favorite song.
It was.
Dance with me now, my Maya.
On some evenings, I wondered what I would do without him. I talked of my concerns, and he would listen. He would hold me as I cried.
Black man shot Malcolm. What's the matter with us?
You are human. That is a historic problem. Cain killed his brother, Abel.
But what will our people do? It took a long time to make Malcolm.
You've got a long time.
Oh, when he was good, he was very, very good.
Some say the American Negro represents the best Africa can hope for.
And do you agree?
In parts. Slavery lasted nearly 300 years. And in 10, 20 years after it was abolished, you had schools, colleges, Fisk, Howard, Tuskegee, you will all be all right.
Other times, he wanted to be waited on hand and foot, as though I was his servant.
Fetch my shoes, Maya.
Don't say fetch to me, Shekali. It's an old-fashioned word they used during slavery.
I was in a labyrinth, going somewhere without knowing my destination or even when I might arrive.
Hello. It's for you.
Sometimes when I answered my telephone, a woman's voice would ask for him. She was calling from New York.
Who was that?
She's a very old black lady, and she was helpful to me when I stopped at the United Nations.
Her voice didn't sound old.
Her name is Dolly McPherson, and she is a very powerful old woman. She is an official at the Institute of International Education. Are you jealous of an old woman, Maya?
The cold wind that would precipitate our demise came unexpectedly one evening. We had been to see a movie starring Doris Day and Rock Hudson. Mm. And on the drive home...
Are you okay?
He would not say a word. Back in the apartment, I prepared dinner, spread out my best tablecloth, and set the table with my good china.
Shekali, dinner's ready.
In the living room, he sat like a Yoruba carving.
Shekali, what's the matter?
Why can't we be like those two actors?
Which two actors?
In the film.
The film?
Yes, the film we have seen tonight.
You mean Doris Day and Rock Hudson?
Why can't we be to each other the way they are?
Are you serious?
Do you think I'm playing?
Those are actors. The roles are just that. Roles. You know that.
He was being perverse, and perversity is contagious.
Oh, you want me to become a perky little blonde woman? Is that what you want? You have little chance of getting that from me.
You American Negroes, I never know if you are just stupid or merely pretending.
Oh, you. Pig.
I gathered a few sordid words and threw them around. The louder I became, the more scornful his look, and the louder I became. I picked up my car keys and my purse and went into the kitchen. I took the corners of the tablecloth, lifted them up, and dragged the whole dinner into the living room.
Well, there's your dinner if you want it. I'm leaving.
I called my mother in San Francisco from a friend's house. Bailey was visiting. I gave them my friend's address, and they said they would both be in Los Angeles by the next day. And they were.
Ma, what do you want?
I want him to go back to Africa. He brings no peace. He should go.
Let's go to your apartment and meet this man.
Shekali had showered and changed, but the soiled tablecloth remained on the floor.
Ah, you must be Bailey. Hello. Maya speaks of you often. And you must be her mother.
Hello.
Mother looked at the litter on the floor.
What's this?
Last night's dinner. I left it there.
Bailey, you and Maya clear that away. Come, Shekali. Now, sit. What is going on between you and my baby?
What do you mean, what's going on?
Does he have enough money to leave?
He has plenty of money. He said he had brought a lot because he was going to carry me back to Africa.
The hell? Did he think he had to pay a bribe?
He's been talking about going to Mexico City. He knows Ghana's ambassador there. He and his wife dote on him. Mm.
I finished clearing up the mess, made some coffee, and joined the others in the living room. My little mother sat in the one upholstered chair as primly as an old-fashioned school teacher.
Well, baby, this gentleman has reported you to me. He said you used profanity last night.
She used words I never even heard Negro sailors use when their ships docked in Ghana's port city of Tema. Her mouth should be washed out. You should do it.
No, I don't think so.
Excuse me, Mom, but I'd like to speak to him. Shikali, would you come with me for a walk around the block?
But of course. I would very much enjoy a walk with you.
Good.
Man's a man, eh?
Yes. Pack his bags, my.
Mother watched as I folded the flamboyant African robes into a trunk.
I was happy to see Shikali at first, but I can't stand his rudeness in my face all the time.
Wasn't he rude in Africa?
It wasn't so bad there. He had his business to focus his attention and his children. I had my own house. Here, he's only got me. I've become the whipping boy.
Well, you sure as hell weren't raised to be that for anybody. But it's all right. Your brother will take care of it.
And an hour later...
I want you to come to Africa yourself, Billy. See how we live, eh?
You bet. I'll probably get there before Maya does. Oh, you've been packing.
Yes. Shikali's been talking about visiting a friend in Mexico City.
Ah, that's exactly where I'm going. And I'm going today. I will telephone my friend. He will meet me.
You need to make the reservations, Ma, for one from Los Angeles to Mexico City.
Bailey, I need your help in the kitchen. Come along.
Yes, Mother.
Come here. You could come with me, my mind.
Oh, not now. Well, maybe later. But why did you decide so suddenly to go?
Your brother. He talked to me man to man. There is something in my personality that rubs you the wrong way. And I may weaken your decision to return to me in Africa. So, as he suggests, I am leaving you some space. Bailey really loves you, but he understands me, and that is more important. He has retained more of the African spirit than you or your mother.
I could have kicked him.
You can come to Mexico, or I'll return here. I mean to take you back.
Safe journey, my love.
Then he was gone, and I started to cry. But it wasn't just about Shikali. I had finished writing my play, but could not find a producer. None that were interested in a new play by an unknown playwright who also happened to be black and female. Malcolm had been murdered, and the Watts riots had left many casualties, and hundreds homeless and hurt. And my great love affair had not worked out for the second time.
I'm thinking about going to New York.
Of course. Go to New York, you know, as long as you don't get involved in the politics.
Yeah, Maya, don't forget. You can always come home, baby.
I know.
Think about it, huh? We've got to go now, and you give me a hug.
Oh.
But remember, baby, you must not think you can call out the troops at each rumor of war.
I knew I hadn't asked outright that they come to Los Angeles to rescue me, but I was extremely glad they had. I was still unsure what to do when a letter from Dolly McPherson, Shikali's African elderly lady friend in New York, helped me decide.
Dear Miss Angelo, I am going into hospital for surgery. I'll probably take a month to recover, but if you want to come to New York, I'll try and help you get settled. Our African friend told me so much about you, I can hardly wait to get to know you. Yours, Dolly McPherson.
That letter made me bless the sweetness of old black women. Rosa Guy, an old friend from the Harlem Writers Guild, offered me a place to stay, and I had been in New York less than a week when she decided to give a party. I was assisting with cooking the banquet of dishes for the party when...
Oh, that must be Dolly McPherson. She's the old lady I invited. I said 7:30, you know, because I thought your friends won't be here until 9 or 10, and I can have a drink with her and she can be gone by then. Oh, good evening.
I'm here to see Miss Angelo.
A young, beautiful, dark-skinned woman wearing a lime green dress stood before me.
I am Miss Angelo.
You can't be. I mean, I'm here to see the older Miss Angelo. Maybe your mother?
I am the only Miss Angelo here. Are you Miss McPherson?
Oh!
Come in, come in.
What did he tell you about me?
That you were a very old but very intelligent woman who had been helpful to him.
He could rightly say that. He courted me seriously and spent quite a few nights in my apartment.
Ah, the old goat. And what did he tell you about me?
That you were very old and that you owned a house where you let rooms. He said you were one of those African Americans who felt they had found something in Ghana and that you always had a soft spot for Africans.
Throughout the party, whenever I caught Dolly's eye, we were rendered speechless with laughter. We were both intelligent women who had been had by the same man in more ways than one. We would have our revenge.
I wanted a flat in a brownstone on Riverside Drive, Dolly.
But life has offered you a one-bedroom apartment on Central Park West in a brand new building. What do you say?
Well, I could paint it all white.
Indeed. And look at that view of the park.
Dolly McPherson and I were becoming good friends. Obviously, we never revealed to anyone that we met because we had been involved, though we did not know it at the time, with the same man. We knew one day we would get our revenge, but we didn't bargain on it being quite so soon.
Hello?
Shekali, telephone from Ghana.
I am not coming for you this time, Omaya. Now I'm convinced that you do not love Africa. You do not love Ghana or Mali. I'm not coming for you. I'm coming to teach at one of your important universities. But I will bring you something, eh? You are so American now. Would you like a car?
Why would you bring a car from Ghana? I'm living in New York. That's just down the road from Detroit. That's where they make cars.
Your tongue is too sharp. I've told you time and time again, you must watch out for your tongue, hmm?
My tongue was all the weapon I had. He had the stature, the money, but I had a secret weapon.
I shall stay with the administrator at the university, but I'd like to see you just for 2 hours. I'd like you to invite some people I've not seen since my last visit.
How many should I prepare for?
A few, about 10.
At least 20, then.
I'd be pleased to have them in my place. When are you planning to come?
I'll be in New York on Friday. Can you see me then?
Oh, Friday? Yes.
Around 3?
3 is fine.
It was short notice, but there would be enough time. I hugged myself with delight and phoned Dolly. We splurged on a bottle of good Spanish sherry.
He's coming with some diplomats. We shall have to be careful.
He would never imagine that we'd meet. But I know you don't want to embarrass him.
I certainly do want to embarrass him, but to himself, not to others. I have to get him back for describing me to you as an old American Negro who lets rooms.
What about Dolly is very, very old, but very intelligent?
We must make him sweat, if only for a minute. He's got to sweat. Now, I think you should arrive just before 4 p.m. That will give time for him and his friends to arrive.
The sight of him at my door made me lean against the jamb. He, too, was rocked back on his heels.
Maya.
Shekali.
He was as beautiful and as black as ever. We held ourselves in check as his escort entered close behind him.
This way, gentlemen.
Within minutes, many more of his colleagues arrived, and my living room was furnished with people in rich robes and colorful caftans. At exactly 5 minutes to 4, I quietly went to the front door and unlocked it, then rejoined the conversation.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I have a burning question I've been meaning to ask, and I know you can answer.
What do you want to know?
Well, will you speak of fidelity? Is the African man more faithful than the European man? And what makes him so?
That is a lady's question, but having said that, it still deserves being answered.
I might have kicked him had I not tasted the promised revenge on my tongue.
The African man is more faithful than the European, not because he loves his woman more than the European loves his woman, but because he loves himself more. You see, the African man is supposed to know where he is at all times. If he's in the wrong place, he knows that, and he has to leave.
Hello there.
Ah.
It took him a second to register her face, and another to remember where he was. He looked at me. Did I see her too? Did I know who she was? How did she get here?
Won't you stand for me?
He bounded out of his chair like a man half his age.
Miss McPherson. Of course, it's Miss McPherson.
You can still call me Dolly.
Of course. Dolly, how have you been? You've heard about what has been going on in Ghana, yes?
Dolly, come to the kitchen, please. We'll be right back.
Know what to do. Do you think any of the other guests had any ideas?
Certainly not. You were a pretty woman greeting a handsome man you had known somewhere else. Known in the biblical sense.
Oh, girl, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Maya, I must be going. My host needs to go to an appointment. Miss McPherson, Dolly. You must tell me how you two met. But I shall need a second of your time, Maya. May we go in here?
We walked into my bedroom.
Maya, you are in danger.
What?
You have become someone I don't know in New York. Did I ever try to make you a laughingstock in Ghana?
No, but most of the time you treated me as if I were an empty-headed flunky.
I may have been wrong, but at least I was being myself. This setup here is beneath you. You have tried to belittle me. That is beneath the Maya I know and still love.
I had meant to prick him, not to pierce him. I saw the hurt and embarrassment in his face.
Coney Bra, go and come.
I knew he would never come again. Dolly was looking as crestfallen as I.
Well, sister, we couldn't swallow the big cat easily. He seems to have stuck in our throat.
Yes, I know.
James Jimmy Baldwin, all 5'4" of him, was a whirlwind who stirred everything and everybody. He lived at a dizzying pace, and I loved spinning with him. We had just spent an afternoon talking and drinking with a group of white writers.
44th Street off Broadway. What I like about you, Maya, is that you can hold your own.
What do you mean?
You can hold your liquor and still talk eloquently on Edgar Allan Poe and Willa Cather. And ask serious questions with whoever.
Why, thank you, Jimmy. Though I still think you're wrong about Eldridge Cleaver.
You can't separate Cleaver from the Black Panthers. He is their general.
Huey Newton is their general. Cleaver is just a loudmouth foot soldier.
The Black Panthers had earned respect in the Afro-American community. They had started a school where the students were given free breakfasts and professional tutoring. People were happy to see them stride through their neighborhood like conquering heroes. Eldridge Cleaver had spent time in prison and had joined the Panthers later. He wrote a collection of essays on race whilst in prison, entitled Soul on Ice, which was published after his release to critical acclaim.
Oh, you don't like Cleaver because you don't like what he said about me in his book. You can't stand hearing anyone insult or even talk about your friends.
His fine hands flew around in the air like dark birds.
You couldn't be more right.
Cabby, stop here.
We arrived at a very seedy-looking hotel.
It's sleazy, I know that, but I used to hang out here years ago. I come here a lot of times when I want to think.
The dimly lit room reeked of spilled beer and urine. Jimmy led me straight to the bar.
Baby, you order the drinks. I've got to make a phone call.
Two scotches, please.
James Baldwin, whose writing challenged the most powerful country in the world, who had sat down with the president, who spoke French as if he had grown up on the streets of Montmartre, came to this dank dive to think. I was absorbed in that thought. I looked up to see a huge man standing about an inch away.
Well, let me buy you a drink.
I'm with someone.
Well, he's not your husband.
And how did you come to that conclusion?
He's one of those, you know...
He stuck out his arm with a limp wrist.
What I do know is that I am with him. So you'd better go back to your seat before he comes back.
Are you sure you don't want that drink?
Ah, you've been looking after her for me, haven't you? Thank you, you son of a bitch. Now you are dismissed.
My jaw dropped. It dropped further when...
All right, I'll take it easy.
The man turned and walked meekly away.
Now listen, Maya, I know you say you hate Cleaver, but he is a thinking black man, and he's in trouble because he's talking about what he thinks.
What he wrote about your homosexuality in his stupid book was so vulgar.
Soul on Ice is an important book. You have to remember the son always kills the father.
What Cleaver wrote about you was a hatchet job on you, on your character, not a critical evaluation of your work.
Sometimes people assail the homosexual because they think by flailing the gay boy, they can reduce that same tendency they suspect in themselves.
I'm just afraid for you supporting roughnecks like Cleaver.
Grow up. I am a roughneck too. Being black and my size on the streets of Harlem will make a choir boy a roughneck. But I didn't bring you here to talk about the Black Panthers. There's going to be a concert at Carnegie Hall. I've got a box for the family and close friends, and I'd like you to come.
It was 1968, and to mark the 100th anniversary of the birth of the great black intellectual, activist, and historian, W.E.B. Du Bois, there was to be a big concert, with Pete Seeger singing and Ozzie Davis and Jimmy spearing up the audience. Concluding with...
Ladies and gentlemen, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King.
He was there, smiling, nodding, waving a hand. An average size, average looking, average black man upon whom hung the dreams of millions. He paid tribute to Dr. Du Bois.
Let me take you to the 19th century. Into the mind of a young man who had been born black... only a few years after abolition of the slave trade, yet whose exquisite intelligence and courage allowed him to become the first African-American to earn a doctorate from Harvard University in 1895.
We listeners bonded resolutely.
Dr. Du Bois had included all of us, no matter our color, status, or age, into his dream of a fair and workable future.
People rose to their feet. Each time I looked, more had risen. So by the time Reverend King said his last word, everyone was standing, and the mood was more joyous than ever. After the concert, I was walking with Jimmy's family down the corridor when Dr. King appeared.
Maya, I wanted to talk to you. What are you doing now?
Well, I'm writing a play at the moment.
Can you put a bookmark on a page and give me 1 month of your time? This poor people's march we're girding up for is not a black march or a white march. This is a poor people's march. I want us to stay in Washington, D.C. until legislation is passed that will reduce the poverty of our rich country. We may have to build tent cities, and if so, I want to be able to do that.
But what can I...
I need someone to travel this country... and talk to black preachers. I'd like each big church to donate one Sunday's collection to the Poor People's March. I need you, Maya, to do it.
Why?
And when anyone accuses me of just being nonviolent, I can say, well, I don't know. I got Maya Angelou back with me.
Fine. I'll do it. But only after my birthday, after April 4th. I plan to throw one hell of a party before I head south.
April 4th, 1968. My apartment smelled like I was readying for a Christmas feast. I was really putting on the dog for my birthday. I looked the apartment over and was proud.
Hello?
Maya?
Yes?
Have you listened to the radio or television?
No.
Maya, please don't turn either of them on. And don't answer your phone. Give me your word.
I give you my word.
I'm on my way.
What could have caused my friend Dolly such alarm?
Dolly, come in, come in. Nothing could be that bad.
It is that bad, and worse. Martin Luther King was shot. Maya, he's dead.
Who was dead? Who was dead now?
Not Malcolm again, not my favorite Uncle Tommy, not again, not again, not dead.
Maya, it's Martin King, Reverend King.
Well, stop talking nonsense, stop it.
Maya, Dr. King is dead.
When I really heard her, the world capsized. If King was dead, who was alive?
Where are you going? Maya! Maya!
I didn't take purse or keys or turn off the stove or lights or tell Dolly where I was going. I joined the many people on the streets on their way to Harlem. That great mind, which considered adversity and said, "This too shall pass away," had itself passed away. That mellifluous voice, which sang out of radios and television and over altars and pulpits, which intoned from picket lines and marches and through prison bars, was stilled. Forever stilled. That strong heart, which had beat with the insistence of a kettle drum, was silent, silenced. Strangers hugged strangers and cried. People stood five deep in front of a shop window, watching a television showing Dr. King speaking but with no sound, while the uproar swirled around them unnoticed. I went into a lighted diner. There was one other customer. His head bowed low.
Well, can I get some service?
If all you want is coffee, you can get it yourself.
I lifted the coffee pot.
May I help you?
No, baby. Nobody can help me. Nobody can help nobody. You know this is all about Malcolm X.
What? Malcolm?
See, they killed him not far from here. And we didn't do anything. A lot of people love Malcolm, but we didn't show it. And now, people who didn't agree with Reverend King, they out on the streets now, just to show how to care for somebody. Half of this is for Malcolm X, a half for Martin Luther King, and a half for a whole lot of others.
I laid my head on the counter, waited with new realization. No matter how great the man, in death, we were all the same. A man lived, a man loved, a man tried, a man died. So the saying went. But that was not all there was to it. Death of a beloved flattens and dulls everything. Great loves and large hates no longer cast such huge shadows or span so broad a distance.
I'm going to hibernate for a few weeks, Dolly. I wanted to let you know so you wouldn't worry.
What do you mean?
I'm going to stay alone. I will not be seeing anyone. I just need to seek balance.
I understand. But listen, I'm going to bring you some food. And you're going to have to talk to me once a day. I don't care what you say, just don't stop talking, okay?
Dolly knew I became mute when overwhelmed and was determined to prevent it. She was true to her word and came every day. But in the end, It was Jimmy Baldwin who pried me loose from my despair.
Just leave it by the door.
Maya, it's Jimmy.
Leave me alone.
Come on, Maya, open up.
Oh, Jimmy.
It's been 2 weeks, Maya. You've got to get out of here. Get dressed.
Jimmy.
Get dressed. I'm taking you somewhere. And put on something that makes you feel pretty. Remember what your grandmother told you?
It's hard to make the prettiest clothes fit a miserable man.
Exactly. The cartoonist Jules Pfeiffer and his wife Judy have invited me to dinner. You will enjoy them. They are both funny, and you need to laugh.
Jimmy was right. The Pfeiffers welcomed us. They laughed easily and often, defying the solemn times and somber news. Soon we were telling each other stories, snatching mirth from unlikely places and serving it to one another with both hands. On the way home...
Thank you, Jimmy.
We survived slavery. Think about that. Not because we were strong. The American Indians were strong, and they were on their own land. But they have not survived genocide. You know how we survived?
How?
We put surviving into our poems and into our songs. We put it into our folk tales. We danced surviving in Congo Square in New Orleans. We put it in our pots when we cooked pinto beans. We wore surviving on our backs when we clothed ourselves in the colors of the rainbow. We were pulled down so low we could hardly lift our eyes. So we knew if we wanted to survive, we had better lift our own spirits. So we laughed whenever we got the chance. Now, how does your spirit feel?
Just fine, thank you, Jimmy. Just fine.
We think it is past time for this television station to do some programs on African-American culture and history.
He was from Northern California and looked the part. His tan sweater sporting the requisite leather elbow patches.
I was told that you've lived in Africa and you might be the very person to bring it all together. We need an insider's view.
Well, I am writing a play right now, but I do have some ideas for a documentary.
And would the subject of African-American culture be of interest to you?
Of course. In fact, in Ghana, I was struck by how much of what I thought was Afro-American culture really had its origin in Africa. I should have anticipated that, but I didn't.
Do you think you have enough material?
How long do you want the program?
No. Not a program. We want a series. 10 one-hour programs. Can you do that?
Certainly. Surely. I just misunderstood.
I wondered if there was that much material in the whole world.
Yes, I can do that.
With time and a kindly librarian, any unskilled person can learn how to build a replica of the Taj Mahal. I pored over books about television documentaries. I memorized phrases and words I had never used. Boom and speed and camera angle. I read instructions on how to write for television. Then, I designed a series called Blacks, Blues, Black. We were blacks in Africa before we were brought to America as slaves, where we created the blues. And now, we were painfully and proudly returning to be upstanding free black people again. The program would show the influence of Africa's culture on the West. In one program, I would have B.B. King playing blues and church choirs singing spirituals. I would point out the similarities in modern ballet and African dance, in art and African sculpture, placing Fon, Ashanti, and Dogon alongside Picasso, Clay, and Rouault. It was thrilling to have faith that I would do a good job.
Miss Angelo? My name is Robert Loomis, and I'm an editor at Random House.
I was so excited about my television series that the telephone call hardly penetrated.
Judy Pfeiffer spoke of you? She said you told wonderful stories.
Oh, how nice of her. But James Baldwin and her husband Jules told the best ones.
I'm calling to ask if you'd like to write an autobiography.
No, thank you. I am a poet and a playwright.
Are you sure?
Yes, quite. In fact, I'm leaving in a few days to write and host a television series for PBS in San Francisco. I'll be there for a month or more.
May I have a California number for you?
Of course, but I'm pretty certain I will not write an autobiography. I didn't celebrate it, but I have only had my 40th birthday this year. Maybe in 10 or 20 years.
In San Francisco, I collected dancers and singers and musicians and comedians. I went to churches and synagogues and community centers. On the first day of the shoot.
Miss Angelo, I'm calling to see if you've had a change of mind. If you are certain that you don't want to write an autobiography for Random House.
Mr. Loomis, I am sure I cannot write an autobiography. I am up to my lower jaw in this television series. When I come back to New York, I'd like to talk to you about a book of poetry.
Fine. Good luck to you.
All the pieces were falling into their proper places. Everyone I approached was agreeable and willing. I borrowed a collection of Makande sculptures and took television crews into elementary schools and people's private homes. Black's Blues Black was well received. People who had looked askance when I began the series were now standing in line to participate. And on my last day...
Miss Angelo? Robert Loomis. I won't bother you again.
I suspected he had talked to James Baldwin.
And I must say, you may be right not to attempt an autobiography, because it is nearly impossible to write autobiography as literature. Almost impossible.
I didn't think. I didn't have to.
Well, maybe I will try it. I don't know how it'll turn out, but I can try.
Well, if you'd like to write 40 or 50 pages and send them to me, we can see if I can get a contract to you. When do you think you can start?
I'll start tomorrow.
That evening, my friends Rosa and Dolly celebrated with my mother and me late into the night. In the early morning, I took my yellow pad and ballpoint pen and sat down at my mother's kitchen table. I thought about black women and wondered how we got to be the way we were. If I wrote a book, I would have to examine the quality in the human spirit that continues to rise despite the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Rise out of physical pain and the psychological cruelties. Rise from being victims of rape and abuse and abandonment to the determination to be no victim of any kind. I remembered a children's poem from my mute days in Arkansas and wrote the first line in the book that would become I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
That was A Song Flung Up to Heaven, the sixth volume of Maya Angelou's extraordinary memoirs. The narrator, older Maya, was Ajoa Ando, and Maya was Pippa Bennett Warner. A Song Flung Up to Heaven was dramatized by Patricia Kumper and produced and directed by Pauline Harris.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.